Is episodes once a week not enough for you, or are you looking for more technical information from the Mixing Music Podcast? Well, guess what? Now you can. You can subscribe to our exclusive content and triple the amount of episodes that you get access to. That's right. Instead of the free once a week episodes, you get 3 episodes a week for only $4 a month or $40 a year. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive to get access to those episodes now.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I am your host, DK, and with me, as always, is Guapo Luis. What is Guapo?
Handsome.
I knew it. Guapo Luis. It doesn't even rhyme. No alliteration. Someone on... it's your mom on the Instagram chat. That's not that.
Oh shit! It really is. Hold on, you gotta show the camera now. You gotta show the camera.
We're live streaming on Instagram, and someone's like, "Que guapo, Luis." What?
Yeah,
that means what? What handsome Lou?
No, it's like what? Like what handsome Luis? Which said in my voice makes it creepy.
The fact that it's literally your mom that just makes me laugh.
It's like the ultimate your mom joke.
Yeah, except it's like real. My mom and thinks I'm really handsome. Nice, actually. Yeah.
What's funny is she cut my hair yesterday.
Oh, yeah. It does look nice. Oh, yeah. Guapo, yeah. Luis.
I was telling the interns today when I came in, everybody noticed the haircut. They're like, damn. I'm like, yeah. Normally I'm Lou. Today I'm sexy.
Guapo, Luis.
Guapo, Luis.
Okay, so today's a good episode of the podcast. We're hoping to keep it kind of succinct and short. Is the idea and the concept of finding your sound and what that means.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Before off mic, off show, Lou mentioned, I said, we should talk about this. And he's like, cool. And then Lou said, I don't know if I've exactly found my sound, which I replied with, that's perfect. I think there's more that we could talk about then, and there's more that we can contribute to this conversation. Let's talk about this. All right, Lou. Usually I like to start off with asking you the questions as we kind of dive into things.
I mean, that makes you a great host.
Kind of set direction, right? Yeah. Thank you. Lou, you recognize when you listen to other people's mixes on Spotify or Tidal or whatever the heck
I'm
you
a
use.
Tidal guy.
Okay. Sorry. Excuse me.
Hey, I want to pay you per play more.
Okay. when you're listening to other people's mixes, do you find that the engineers that you're listening to have a sound sometimes?
Yes. You can kind of hear it in like, when
you're
know,
able
like,
to prefer one engineer over another, that means
you kind of identify their sound. Yeah. And when you start noticing, it's like, it's not necessarily that they're like bassier or anything. It's like, I really like how they do their S's. I really like how their snares are really loud and they seem to poke out the mix, but they're not really transient.
Yes, like I've noticed.
You start picking out little details about what they do.
Like, for example, something what we talked about in the past is I think Manny Mariquin is kind of an interesting engineer to study because
his S's are pretty loud.
Yeah, well, that specifically on some of his songs, but I think he's one of the most interesting to study because I think he has the least amount of consistency tonally.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about, like, he mixes John Mayer and then goes into Post Malone and then goes into Charlie Puth.
Yeah.
And then recently did, was it was it Drake? Yeah, Drake's like a
Oh, that's right. You're right. He did.
Or yeah. or who was it? It was usually
no. I think you're right on that.
And it was somebody else too. Also, who does? Oh, Kendrick's album.
Wait, he did like, Kendrick?
Yeah, he did most of Kendrick's album. Usually it's Ali, but in this mm-hmm. instance it was Manny Marroquin. Very different sounding records across the board. I mean, consistent through the album, but I think he's very interesting to study because his sound is not a tonal thing with loud drums and lots of brightness. I think his sound is very creative, like especially if we compare it to Serban Ganea's mixes.
Yeah.
Whose are like so clean and so right and so nice to the point where like Manny's sound is clean but with lots of character. That's how I describe it. Where Serban is like so clean that it almost doesn't have any character.
So I would put Bob into that same Manny category where like Bob has a kind of a sound of his own. It's very clean, but it's also very overdriven in a clean way. If you ever notice like when his choruses hit, they like distort a little in a pleasant way where it's like, oh, it just kind of hits you in the face. But yet when you look at his dynamics, it's all like one sausage fest. Like he somehow knows how to get things loud without getting things louder.
So this is important. I think this matters more in the later years of your career.
Yeah.
I would say after the first 5 years, plus years of your mixing career, this matters more. Same with production and stuff. Because I think it's very, very important for everybody, producers, songwriters, engineers, to not only continually do things that are out of your comfort zone, to expand your palette and your discovery for your sound. That should be something continuous that doesn't ever end, your discovery for your own sound. But at the same time, slowly it starts to naturally develop because there's a reason why some of your clients hire you instead of other engineers. Like I literally have clients that have voiced to me for this song, I want you to mix it, but they actually have somebody else mix some of the other
songs. The next song, yeah.
Yeah, and they come back to me later. And I've heard many, because it's because I mix it in a certain aggressive way, and I can describe my sound a little bit later, but in a specific way that they like. And this is like the craziest thing ever. Because of my portfolio, they've said out loud, I came to you because I listened to your portfolio and I can imagine what this song is going to sound like after you touch it.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons it's important to have a portfolio. And if you're an artist looking to hire an engineer, that's a great way of looking at portfolios, is imagining what your song is going to sound like after they touch it.
Oh, yeah.
So this is interesting. The fact is, there's typically enough pattern or consistency between mixes from the same engineer that we're able to determine whose mixes I like more.
Yeah.
And whose mixes I like less.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's healthy for us to talk about whose mixes we don't like, and I'm sure many audience members are very, very interested.
I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't like mine.
I will say something, like the only one that I can say, because they're recent mixes, I like a lot more, but I used to extremely dislike Mixed by Ali's mixes. I actually did not like him as a mixer at all. I thought he was one of the worst, especially for someone so professional.
Mm-hmm.
But in the last few years, he's changed my mind. Like, he's actually gotten a lot better. I don't know what happened or if someone called him out on his bullshit or whatever. But I think his recent stuff is very good.
Yeah, honestly.
So that's the one person I'm going to say was bad because he's now, I don't think he's bad anymore.
Yeah. Honestly speaking, like, I understand the notion because there was a lot of mixes like, how can I put this? They were a bit harsh in the past. I don't really hear that anymore. And for me, a harsh mix is when I start kind of getting like, it might have been characteristic, but you couldn't find a way to keep that character without so much of the abrasiveness. Yeah.
So, it's interesting. Everybody has patterns, and we hopefully support each other and learn from each other. Whether that you think that their sound is good or not, there's something you can learn from it. For example, someone that tends to mix harsher, usually their mixes are louder than yours.
Yeah. To be honest,
and that's the thing you're gonna learn.
Sometimes you find out that,
and that's one piece. Sometimes
when you're mixing
lose.
For people, yeah. Sometimes when you're mixing for people, and you think, oh, their rough mix is really harsh, and then you turn it in, they're like, I feel like mine was louder though. It's like you might want to add that harshness back.
And depending on the priority,
yeah,
that harshness is the reason why they pick their mix and not yours.
Yeah, I've had that happen in the past. Where
me too.
I won't say what track, but it was a track featuring Jeremiah on it. And I was like, ooh, a Jeremiah feature. Because at the time, and still to this day, like the main artist on the record was, still isn't as relevant as Jeremiah. So I was more doing it for the feature. But mine had way more punch. The kick was hitting harder. The bass was fuller and thick. And like, it was honestly speaking, like AB difference to like maybe another engineer. It was great. But the rough was so rough that I couldn't take it seriously, in my opinion. But what I failed to note was, you know, that harshness is part of its sound, though. Like, they actually had an intended sound, and I moved away from it. So part of finding your sound, too, is understanding how your sound plays a role in other people's own unique sound. Like, are you a chameleon type? Or are you a type that has a unique kind of structure to the way you like your mixes to sound, and you don't really deviate too much from that because you kind of have, I guess you could say, this marketable tone? What is it? Kind of like what we were talking about. Okay, cool. Manny American being a chameleon is great, but he's also very uniquely himself, too.
Like, some of his stuff doesn't sound as good as other things.
But you could tell it was his.
But yeah, but it's like, it's character, not bad.
Exactly.
Because you know that when he mixes Charlie Puth, that shit sounds so good.
Yeah.
And if he's able to do that, that means he made this sound a little bit worse on purpose.
And sometimes or because it's of the source A&R. Material.
Sometimes it's politics, too.
Yeah. Sometimes it's source material where it's like, we recorded this record. It's like, you know, these vocals were recorded kind of rough. Like, it's going to take a lot of work to get them to sound better. It's like, okay, but we can't get the person back in the studio. Like, they don't want to do it anymore. Like, we, you know, we may not be able to accommodate any more recording for this record. So you just got to work with what you got. You know, sometimes it's quite literally source material issues. But
And like I said, I mentioned slightly, is sometimes it's politics where, in most bigger label situations, you're not only talking to the engineer and the artist.
Yeah.
And potentially producer and mastering engineer, you're also talking to the A&R. Everybody's feeding through the A&R.
Yeah.
So like, the A&R is approving the mix and the A&R is hiring the mastering engineer. So it's this thing where sometimes it's politics and you get said no, or someone prefers something else, or they give you a stupid revision request because of politics. And that sucks. That sucks the most. But that's not, I think that most engineers do not have to deal with those politics, and that's most people don't work with labels, I would say.
Yeah, honestly speaking, like, the idea of finding your sound helps you more with the underground and independent market more than it does with the label market, I would honestly argue. Main reason is there's a lot more independent work to go around than there is label work. Now, when label work is found, yes, there's a ton of artists getting signed every year, but that doesn't mean they have like the biggest budget for the biggest engineers. And so there is a lot of work for independent engineers who aren't part of a production house or anything to be involved, sure. But let's be honest, I could probably throw a rock and hit 100 independent artists before I hit a label one, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and then
finding
a way to
actually serve a demographic in that market is partly because of your sound.
And I don't know about you, but for me, and this is, most of my income comes with independent artists.
Yeah. Like,
and I don't know about you, but I prefer
for that. Me, it used to be mainly label, but that's because I was working with one, maybe two artists at a time. Like, I didn't, to this day, I still don't take on too much work because the work that I take on is still very relationship based. I don't want to say I don't market myself, because I obviously market myself, but I don't over market myself to the point where I'm constantly taking on new clients or taking on new work, because I have to finish what's in front of me first.
Yeah.
And usually that's because the artists that I work with, because I've met some of them through my label work, or they're kind of used to that workflow, they're like, yo, we need to record these 5 songs, 6 songs. And so we're not done until that project is done. So I'm very project based versus single based.
Yeah.
But with that said, like, it used to be a lot more label money that I was dealing with. And in those cases, like, you're right, it's usually the A&R. Usually the artist is lucky if they get their way with the record, because at the end of the day, they're being financed. And because of that, it's not their record.
Yeah, it is, but it isn't. You know, it's all crazy again. Politics. But let's kind of review what we've talked about. First off, I think we kind of mentioned it briefly, but I want to reemphasize it, is that it's okay. Do not force your sound. Do not try to create a sound. I think it comes to you, and it's it's honestly based off of, and it should be based off of, personal preference.
Yeah.
And once you kind of get used to create habits and you like the sound of certain records, and you kind of, you discover sounds by listening to other sounds, mm-hmm. and then trying things and discovering that you like that too.
Yeah.
For example, if a metalheads mix a pop song, they're going to naturally mix that pop song to be stylistically similar to
metal.
Metal.
Yeah.
Because that's what they prefer.
Yeah, they might actually lend a tonality from the metal side of music and apply that to your kick. And it may still hit hard. They may still say, oh, that's bassier than I normally do it, but it's still probably going to be a lot tighter than somebody who deals with hip hop normally.
And one real case study of that in modern day is that most pop mixes mm-hmm. are being mixed by R&B hip hoppers,
yeah,
like mixers. So that's why most pop music has heavy drums and bass and 808s. Yeah. Also, not just the mixer, but the producer as well. Usually, yeah. the producer also does hip hop and whatever. So it could be a Charlie Puth pop song, but he's so influenced by hip hop as well that all of a sudden there's those characteristics that slowly shine in both the production and the mixing stage.
Yeah, like if you notice, like contemporary pop music. Let's say like contemporary pop R&B would be kind of like Keisha's lane, where like if you notice like her producer Ron Fair, most of the songs that Ron Fair is involved with, like most of her big hits, aren't actually like heavy drums or anything. In fact, they have large sounding drums, but they don't actually consume the mix. Like that's actually not the focal point of the mix. It's usually like the strings, the melodies, the piano, the guitars. It's always something else, but like, imagine if they were to now do like a trap song.
Yeah.
It's not going to hit the same. It's not going to be bad. Like technically speaking, it may still sound great, but it's not going to sound the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the second thing that I want to mention, the second point is you kind of briefly mentioned this is you're going to have to deal with many different sounds.
Yeah.
From the sound of the artist to if everybody's involved, right? The sound of the, mm-hmm. the artist, the songwriter, the vocal producer, the recording yep. engineer, the beat producer, the instrumentalist, the guitar player, mm-hmm. The mixing engineer, the mastering engineer, the A&R. You're going to have to learn how to deal with everybody's unique sounds and be able to figure out. So the cool thing is that people are going to, and this is why I like working with an independent level more, mm-hmm. is because there's a lot more freedom to be creative and a lot more room to wiggle in.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more room to wiggle in. Wiggle room?
I mean, you can wiggle in the room if you want. Like, it's not the most comfortable thing to do for hours. But.
Yeah, so I think, that's one of the reasons why I like independent artists. There's a lot more creative freedom and ability to express myself, where I mm-hmm. have a lot more freedom to say, you know, F your rough mix, like Jason Joshua says, and I can rightly do so. I can rightly, it's up to me.
Yeah.
And I like that, and most of my clients also like that. They're yeah. coming to me for that. But that being said, like, again, the second point is being aware that everybody has a sound
yeah.
and everybody has preferences. And your job as a mixer is only a small part mm-hmm. of the entire process. And you cannot have pride with your sound and demand that your sound is prioritized over every other position that was yeah. involved. You just can't do that. It's stupid, dumb, and selfish.
My favorite saying has been, the artist's name is in the front, mine's in the back.
Yes.
Consider albums.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that that's important to note and to also be aware of.
Yeah.
Lou, let's talk a little bit about what you're saying. Why did you say that you don't think you have a sound quite yet?
Because I don't really focus on my personal desire to have it sound one specific way. Rather, I do what's best for the artist's confidence in their record and what I also think is going to do best for the record. It's more of a combination of sounds than it is one person's sound. For instance, like if I'm working with Selena, Elise, like her record Around Me, she loved the mix. I still think I could have maybe not gone as hard on the limiter and all that, but she loved the way it sounded. She liked that it was aggressive, this and that. And I'm like, cool. Now, if I wanted to push harder on it and voice a little more of my tone into it, it probably would have sounded a little different, but it wouldn't be serving the artist. And I think in the process of doing that for so long, I've kind of found myself not being able to say, well, how bright do you like your hi-hats? Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know. But I know what it sounds right. And if somebody told me, I've noticed your mixes are more like this, it's probably something I haven't taken into account myself.
I mean, and I could speak on your behalf, having listened to many different mixes from various different generations of Lou.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like time periods.
Lunarations?
Lunarations, there you go. I don't think... It's interesting. I can tell from your sounds that you are very customer service forward minded. Cool. You do a really good job. I feel like you do a really good job catering to the needs of the song and to the clients.
Mm-hmm.
There's times where you have a sound, but I think your sound is more based on genre. Mm-hmm. And like, cause like your R&B tracks tend to be similar. Your hip hop tracks don't sound like your R&B tracks, but they tend to be similar with other hip hop mm-hmm. tracks, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, there's enough of a difference with everything. It's interesting. And the fact that I'm able to like kind of describe in words what I'm hearing as well is the sound, right?
Okay.
But yeah. It's interesting because you said you think that you don't have a sound, and I think that that's important to bring up. Do you think that that is a benefit? Is that good for you, or is that do you think that you want to have a sound?
I think it's a good thing because I think one of the things that you said is very true in the way that I've always kind of focused my business, which is service-oriented business, where I came from service industry. I did sales and all that, so I also know what it is to like be the one making the pitch and closing and all that, and that's cool. But at the end of the day, I'm getting hired to work on somebody else's record, and it's not my own. If it was my own and it was my production and I thought, hey, this should not be like this, then cool. I'm the one in control, but I'm not the producer of this record. I'm not the artist that's putting their name in front. You know, like I said, my name goes on the back. If I'm lucky nowadays, you get credited. You know, I don't even have equity in the long haul unless they're offering me equity in the long haul, you know. But with that said, I want to do what's right and best for the artist. So sometimes when I'm listening to reference tracks that they send me and everything, or when they say like, oh, I feel like it could be a little darker, my voice could be a little bit backer, I'm not fighting it. It's not my record. And because of that, I don't necessarily look to make it like that's a Lou mix. I want it to be as best as possible within their vision.
Yeah, and I think on that note, I'm a little bit more aggressive
mm-hmm.
where because people usually come to me for my creative input.
Mm-hmm.
And so my sound is aggressive, like meaning that if it's calling for it and if they want me to, and typically they do.
Yeah.
And if I were to go all out, the rough sounds pretty different from the final. Yeah. And that's part of my sound.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, if I have to, I mean, you could describe it too, but if I had to describe it, usually transients, drums and vocals are always pristine. My vocals are always the highlight for everybody's feedback. Vocals are very important. I'm a vocalist myself. And typically the drums.
Yeah.
Like transient.
Like I noticed you have a smoother mid, like pop R&B.
Tonally I'm more like mid dip.
Yeah, well,
I don't like a harsh mid range.
I will say, I guess if I did have a sound from my vocals would be like a little more mid forward. Like, I noticed that I have, like, a little bit more going on around, like, 500-600 hertz.
Not all of your songs. I've heard a couple of your songs that were, like, and that's what the song needed was, like, a little bit more Chris Brownie.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, less mid-range and more just that top end. I've heard a few of your songs where you've done that. And so that's why I said that I think at your default, it's a little bit more of that low mid-range stuff. But I've heard mixes where it's just like, wow, this is the same person, and it was your mix.
Good. Call me, Manny Lewickin? That sounds like more like Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah, I thought that was more of a Star Wars.
Manny Lewickin? I don't know. But yeah, like honestly speaking, like the thing I've noticed more about yours is it's that kind of like smoother California sound.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, versus like that East Coast New York, very mid-forward, like kind of ear catching kind of thing, while yours is more like soothe but pretty ear catching.
We never even mentioned the sound of the natural tendencies of regions within the same country, East and West Coast.
Like there's Southern mixes, there's Northern mixes, there's West and East Coast.
And that's also a lot of it's based around culture and genres that are popular. Yeah, in that exactly. Area. Like
Like drill Nashville. Music is very mid forward.
And that's UK, right? Yeah. So countries, there's a lot, like we've talked about many times before, different countries have different sounds.
Yeah.
Japan is very wildly different and in fact, the opposite tonalities of America.
Like I remember I don't know if you were there, but I do remember a conversation with Bob Horn where he was talking about doing Chinese mixes where it's like, oh yeah, don't touch their S's. They love their sibilance. It's like, really? Like
yeah, out here,
people just don't want
it.
Yeah, it's like a lot out here. You usually hear people like, "Oh yeah, tame those S's."
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I think that. Yeah, never mind. I'm not gonna talk about what I thought. But let's. I think that's it. I think that's important. There's regional sounds as well. I think getting familiar with different sounds. I think most people understand that there are sounds and people are able to recognize them.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last thing that I want to mention is the importance. This is a thought that I have. If you listen to music a lot and you're able to determine that you like this song,
mm-hmm.
the sounds in this song more than the sounds of another song,
mm-hmm.
then you have the skills to be a mix engineer.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You may not have the skills. wait.
Discernment.
What did I say? You have the what?
If you have the ability to discern the difference between one mix and another.
One that you like. And one, if you're able to discern like versus not like.
Yeah. Then you may be able to develop the skill set fairly easier than others.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
So like, for example, you might find out that you prefer brighter mixes.
Yeah.
But
not too bright.
But the thing is, like, when you're mixing, you don't know how to make things brighter without being harsh.
Yeah.
So that's where the skills come into play.
Yeah.
But I want to say, like, again, coming back to that, like, if you're able to discern between songs that you like the sound of and songs that you don't like the sound of, you have the potential to be a mixer.
Yeah.
Because that's all it is. And the skill is just being able to get to those sounds.
Yeah.
I think that was a better succinct way of saying that.
I think so.
Yeah, so hopefully that helps. Let's talk about our sponsors real quick. Thank you. We're sponsoring our own episodes. This episode is sponsored by the Mix It Music Podcast. Do you like our podcast? Well, we have YouTube channels. We have Twitch streams. We have
exclusive content.
Exclusive contents. That's right.
Yeah.
Where if you like the podcast and want three times the amount of episodes, you can go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive for $4 a month or $40 a year.
Mm-hmm.
For a price of one cup of coffee for a month, you get three times the amount of episodes. And the other two episodes that come out weekly are always technical based. They're not philosophical where I talk about how to win clients or business. They're always technical based, how to improve your producing, mixing, mastering. And that's our number one feedback that we keep getting for everybody. More technical. So here it is for you. Join the other crew. There's a bunch of other people that are joining in. It's really, really great content. Another sponsor is FilePass. If you're interested in file sharing, but for engineers, it's really, really great. You should just look into it.
Go to
mixingmusicpodcast.com/FilePass. Lou and I use that always, and you probably know some engineer friends that use it, and we swear by it. Yeah, so check it out. Best deals are always found on mixingmusicpodcast.com. All right. I think that's kind of it for this episode.
I believe so.
We want it to be succinct. I think we kind of got through everything. And the one thing, one of the purposes of this podcast is we want people to feel more confident about their abilities and skills. I think that at the end of the day, the thing that keeps people from improving is a lack of confidence.
Yeah.
And the only way that you can become better through becoming more confident is by putting in the time, putting in the work. When you become more confident, you'll be able to use your ability of discernment to find out what you do like and what you don't like.
Yeah.
Which will in turn drastically change how well you mix or how much you feel about your mix. You will start to eventually like your own mixes, believe it or not.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it's at the end of the day, it all comes down to confidence and your ability. We hope that when you listen to this podcast and these episodes, we instill some form of confidence for you to continue to elevate your art form.
Oh yeah. And if the argument here is, well, I don't have any clients, I'm sure you have a friend that plays guitar or something. Honestly, friends are the best people to actually make mistakes with because they'll never even realize it was a mistake. They're just seeing it as a good time together with you. Feel free to expand and try new things. me and DK have friends that we literally produce and record with. We don't make money off of it, but I bet you anything, we're trying out some new things. We're trying to see. It's like, well, if it doesn't work, it's not like we're getting fired. Let's be honest.
Who are they? Who else are they going to go to? Somebody else that does it for free?
Yeah, not in LA at least.
All right. Well, on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. Are you tired of using Google Drive or Dropbox to send files to clients? Well, never get burned again with FilePass. I love and use FilePass exclusively for sending files to my clients. It's a cloud file sharing website specifically made by engineers for engineers. It's absolutely amazing. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/FilePass to check out the full feature list and subscribe today. Never lose another dime to burned projects. Happy mixing, my friends, and enjoy the show.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.